Stay tuned for Paratalk Radio with Ted Wolf and Psychic Cindy right here on Blog Talk Radio.
In the small hollow in North Carolina, there have been several Bigfoot sightings skirting fields and meadows and even attacking chickens at a local watering hole.
Others may need to be on the lookout for something other than deer when they hit the woods this week.
Up until Sunday night, he hadn't been spotted recently, but according to these pictures, the legendary Mothman is back.
The number of UFO sightings is soaring tenfold over the past 25 years.
Now, she's not talking about people. She is talking about ghosts hanging around what some say is a real-life haunted house.
You're listening to Paratalk Radio with Ted Wolf and Psychic Cindy on paratalkradio.com. Paratalk Radio is your one stop for all things paranormal, the unknown, and the supernatural. We cover topics such as ghosts, hauntings, Bigfoot, UFOs, and more.
Paratalk Radio is a product of the Genesee Valley Paranormal Investigators. You can join us every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 7 p.m. Central. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, iTunes, TuneIn, and Google Play. We are a part of AHAM Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com. Live video streaming can be seen on Facebook at facebook.com/paratalkradio and periscope.tv.
To contact us, email paratalkradio@gmail.com or search on the web for Paratalk Radio. Paratalk Radio is recorded live at J. Wolf Productions in Ontario, New York, engineered by John Winter. We are Rochester, New York's only paranormal talk radio show.
The topics, views, and opinions expressed on our show may not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Paratalk Radio, our hosts, or our sponsors. Some of the language on our show may not be suitable for listeners under 16. And now, here are your hosts, Ted and Cindy.
Hi, everybody!
Hello.
What? What was that, John?
It just started running. Because...
It just started running by itself.
That's funny. Okay, let's see. Let's see who we have here. Da 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 da. Oh, I need you.
Da 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 da.
Hi, Hover.
Because that's the beginning.
Hi, Robert. Well, it's way up here though.
Oh, you have to roll it. Put it over there.
Hi, Jesse.
And roll it.
No, I already tried that, honey.
Oh, well,
it won't go up.
It's because it's too late. Can't go to him.
Okay. Hi, Jesse. Hi, Edna. Hi, everybody.
Jason Marble. Sean Curran. Hey,
that
Sean.
Design, Cindy. What does that mean? Hey, Jason. Hey, Sean.
Jeez, I haven't
hey,
seen
Jim.
I haven't seen Sean in forever. Miss you, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, everybody else, please say hi so I can see you. So I can go, hi.
Yeah.
Because it says we are, oh, well, we did have 13. Now we're down.
So, that's okay, but that's all right.
Yeah, but I just wanted to, so I could say hi to everyone.
Okay.
Cindy is getting ready in case she gets cold.
Please.
Oh, heck yeah.
We did it. Look at Paratalk Radio shirts. Look at.
Yes. Listen, I try to wear mine every
yeah,
day.
I do too. I try.
Oh, wait. I have, oh, hi, Keith. Hi, Keith Cook. Carlson Ross. That
wow.
Was, that's a mouthful.
That's a mouthful. KCCR.
KCCR. Okay.
K. Sarah. Sarah.
Hey, David Styler.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy. What you doing?
Yeah. So tonight's going to be fun.
Well, duh. It's always fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't it supposed to be fun?
Yeah, it is fun.
Always.
So,
yeah. Always.
Always fun.
I have it over here. Look at that.
Yeah, look at you.
But I'm going.
Yeah,
to...
you stole it all. No, I gave it to you.
I was going to say, since when?
It's not like it's a clapper.
I was looking
I didn't
at
give
the,
it to you.
I was looking at Robin.
Clap on, clap off. The clapper.
There you go. Clap
better
on
than
the clapper.
The clap.
So
I don't want the clap. No. Stop the clapping.
All right. So before we get to our because she's going to be calling here in about 4 minutes. I want to talk about last week's show.
Oh, hi, Robin.
Hi, Robin.
Hi, excited to be on your show.
Thank you. I really want to touch base on Michael T. Keene's Heart Island Cemetery of Strangers because some wonderful things have been happening. people have been emailing me and messaging me about Heart Island.
Oh.
And do you remember last week we were talking about what else? Why are they stopping people going to the island? Like,
well,
what?
You and I discussed it afterward, and I said I think there could be biohazard. I think
right.
there could
and
be hazardous material there.
To that, I've been getting messages saying that maybe it's because, and there's a few things here. One of them was they don't want people to know that the bodies that did come from the island that fell into the water have actually, because bones are still somewhat light, some of them can float downstream and showed up in other areas.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is conspiracy theories. So is government hiding something else there besides just a million people?
That's where they
besides a million
so,
people.
All the
yeah,
big
so,
foot
I mean,
bones.
These
Hi, Karen.
Hi, James. Hi, Jamie.
These are all conspiracy theories, so it all is possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are they hiding, if they are hiding? So, I mean, this is something that we have to think about.
I mean, think about it this way. Let's just do it scientifically. Let's not put in the paranormal.
Okay.
Just scientifically.
Just morally just think, too, because...
Let's take out morals, right? Because, I mean, putting all those bodies in there,
disgusting.
Holy shitballs, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But let's just talk about... scientifically, because when a body breaks down, you're not only does it, I mean, in the ways that they are doing this. So let's say they were using pine boxes like they should,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot longer for the wood to break down. It takes a lot longer for the body to break down into the soil. But we know that
especially
even
newer
with,
bodies.
Right. But we also know that they were discussing that the babies were put in cardboard boxes. So now think about a body decomposing. Paper will decompose much quicker rate than a pine box, number
oh, correct.
One.
Even though it's made from the same materials, more or less, it will decompose faster.
Number two, now the soil is getting contaminated because the body is breaking down.
Well, I mean, that's true in every cemetery and every, you know, but.
But we're not talking about every
really.
Cemetery. Every
yeah.
cemetery uses coffins, wood majority, or
yeah,
pine boxes.
But there's a concrete vault that's usually at the bottom first, and then they drop the coffin in. And
correct.
Keeps all that shit from becoming part of the.
Because, listen.
That
is
true.
I did anthropology class. Did you know maraschino cherries? Do not eat maraschino cherries, people. They are disgusting.
Especially
when
they've been
sitting
like
they don't break
Honey
down.
Jack for a long time.
They don't break down.
Oh, so you poop out big cherries?
When you bury them,
yeah,
they don't break down, which means there are so many chemicals in there that you're putting that in your body.
Mungie, we need to dig up old maraschino cherries.
Well, I buried a rat.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I had to, I mean, I literally
and I
had
get,
to bury
I,
a rat for
I,
my
I
class.
I get that. And
I mean,
get
that's
that.
Just scientifically speaking. But now we're talking about the mass grave. That soil is permeated with bodies.
Bodies that had diseases.
That biohazard.
Lots of diseases.
Biohazard.
I mean, you had AIDS victims, you had yellow fever, you had black plague, you had all this stuff there.
Biohazard.
Now here's something
else. And
we're
not talking about the metal band.
Now, here's something else I want to bring up is, has a priest ever blessed that area as a grave? You know how they do that? They have
yeah.
somebody come and you know, make it
right.
holy ground. Is
right.
it?
Hallowed
is it?
Ground. I have no idea. I mean, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, so there's...
Hi, Terry.
So there's another thing you can think about.
No clap for Cindy.
So there is a lot of stuff with this Heart Island that we as individuals that... I mean, 150 years we didn't know about this. And now we know. So I think we should be looking into this more. I don't think we should allow this to happen anymore.
Bodies still where will New York City bury their paupers? Where will they bury the people that are? I mean,
so let
on.
Them do like the Vikings
Hi,
did. Put them on a platform
oh God,
and bury them
awesome.
In bury them in the ocean.
I mean, we could certainly
burn
cremate.
Them, cremate.
We could certainly cremate. It would be a lot healthier.
Right. Well, I just wanted to bring that
per
up,
se.
And I know I know that we have Robin coming on. I don't want to hold her up too much. she's probably. What's that, Davis? Cindy,
David,
there is a reason why there are fences around graveyards. People are dying to get in. Ha!
Well,
ha,
there
ha,
is
ha,
a difference,
ha.
Though. There is a difference between a cemetery and a, what's the other word for a cemetery? Or we think there's another one.
The graveyard.
No, not graveyard, though. A cemetery and a, maybe it is graveyard.
I don't know. But I love that, too. Because Twinkies, very Twinkies. Twinkies are the same way. You bury Twinkies and they last forever. They last forever.
Disgusting.
Okay, so real quick, before we get to Robin, because we need to do that, she's probably waiting on the other line. You want to come over here for me and see if she's up there waiting? Yes, she is. So go ahead and bring her on. But Robin, welcome to the show.
Hi,
but,
Robin.
But we're
give us just a moment,
just give us
okay?
a second. But are there.
That's fine. Hi, how are you doing?
Good, good. So let's see. I just wanted to kind of reach out to everybody quick and say, I know we can't see you raising your hands, but I've got this about all these new paranormal shows that have been coming on that were just released in the past week or so.
Holy shit, Bo. Can we take a moment? Can we just do what they're called?
Now I put one on here that I've been watching for 20 freaking years. Now, Most Haunted being the British version, of all these paranormal shows. When I used to watch it, it's exactly the same. They do the same thing. They don't use all these gadgets. They don't use the, all this stuff. And it's still primarily the same. And I love watching that show. When they get scared, they get scared. I mean, it's kind of like the Ghost Brothers. When they get scared, they show you, or get scared, they show you, they get scared.
I love Ghost Brothers.
So do I. So, I mean, but
it's hysterical.
But stuff like that is different and it's fun. Mm-hmm. But I've got to tell you, I even though I love Katrina, I have no desire to watch this Portals to Hell. No desire whatsoever.
I had Jansen because Jansen has this thing with Zach Bagans. He just likes watching that show, and it drives me insane. But I allow my child because I'm not going to control what he watches up to a point. He can make his own decisions, except because I protect my shiz. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Protect all of my electronic devices. That's imperative here, but I'm not gonna let them watch something called Portals to Hell.
I mean, I just don't understand why they would name it like that. First off, the next thing is do you really want to watch a show that's even more more hypothetical than ghost hunting shows? I mean, I'm not looking forward to it. And then I just watched Ghost Bait. I watched two episodes of Ghost Bait.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that show?
Yes. It's kind of terrifying, people. What they do is they are making you. So
they take their client. They take their client.
Right. So hang on. What they do is take psychology to the nth degree. So it's not just putting you into your fear and giving you like this brief, like, no, they're taking you there, putting a burlap
bag over
your head, and you are just terrified.
Well, and I understand because what they're trying to do is to boost your
it's
other
like
senses.
Aversion.
They're taking the vision away and hoping that your other senses will become stronger at that moment.
Okay.
And people are getting scared. I'm telling you right now, you put a burlap bag over my head and stick me in a place supposedly haunted. It's not that I'm going to be scared. I'm going to be totally ridiculous.
Well.
Totally ridiculous. But the clients, think about these people that don't have.
Maybe we should try it out. Wouldn't that be funny?
Sure. I mean, but we have clients.
We'll make a video.
sure. I mean, I'm just saying that, I have no desire. I mean, I watched Ghost Bait. I did record it.
Oh, my God.
I watched two episodes. But Bilbo
is Zach related to Bilbo?
Bilbo Baggins. Anyways, and I'm not.
Oh God, that's.
I don't know. I'm not
sorry,
thrilled, but
me.
What I am thrilled about is Travel Channel is bringing the guys back. Ghost Hunters is coming back on Travel Channel. They are coming back.
I saw that. I'm happy as a clam.
I thought that was amazing.
I'm happy as a clam.
Yeah, that's great. So, all right. So, we have Miss Robin Murphy on the phone with us. Hello, Robin.
Hello there. How are you doing?
There you
are. Hi, Robin.
How
are
you? I'm glad to be here. She's on call tonight.
Well, I just want to say here real quick. Robin is an author of paranormal mystery books, gospel speaker for an author platform that helps new authors. I think it's amazing. She's appeared on, she's appeared on several television channels, ABC, NBC, Fox, stuff like that. And she's been on several shows. She's got some books out there, Sullivan's Secret, Secret of the Big Easy, Federal Cities Secret, Secret of Coffin Island, and there are a few. I think there's at least one more that I missed.
Yeah,
but
five in the series.
There is another one. But I got to tell you, I mean, we have not had the opportunity to read these, and we want to.
I
know Cindy
does.
Cindy loves the paranormal mystery, but we want to get into this with you, and we want to hit a couple topics.
Savannah's Secret.
Okay, so
Marie Bartek and the SIPS team.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So one of these is when did you start writing? I mean, were you young? When did you become an author?
I kind of started later in life. I probably got into writing. I always say writing found me back in 2006, 2007. And that was more of a romance. And I stuck it on Lulu.com, and I think I sold 5 books, which, you know, three of them were my family. So I kind of realized that I needed a little more training with the writing aspect. Like, I had all the ideas. I had the creative side. But when it came to putting pen to paper, I needed a little more guidance, I guess, if you will. So I did take some online classes. I took a writing course, a college writing course, and that kind of helped me really put it together in a timeline sequence. And really, Sullivan's Secret developed out of my college course because I was able to start coming up with ideas. You know, my professor wanted me to kind of get an idea of what I enjoyed writing about, and I've always been drawn to the paranormal, you know, ghost investigating, psychics, all of those things, and a mystery. So I kind of just pulled all that together, and the SIPS team was developed.
Well, that's awesome. I think it's amazing. I mean, I know I started later in life myself. Cindy wants to write a book, so she's really late in life. But but you know, I
she is going to write a book. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I did start later in life. Also, in fact, I started out with a co-writer as well, co-author.
Well,
look,
I've written stuff along the way as a kid, and up to now, I can remember starting books at 14.
Yeah. Well, I was going to mention that I sat down the other night and I was thinking about the first thing that I ever wrote. And believe it or not, it was a song about cancer.
Wait, what?
Yeah. When I was little, I wrote a song about cancer and I actually buried it in a wooden box. And I know exactly where it's buried. I just have to drive there to get it. But that's one of the things. But I've published like short stories.
You buried I buried a song.
So I publish poetry, short stories, songs, or music, I should say.
Hi, Danielle.
And publish my first two books. I mean, for myself, I'm getting the swing of it a little bit. So, but it's great.
Yeah.
Now, whole thing, because you're interested in the paranormal, can I ask what brought you to the paranormal?
I really don't know. I think I started off probably in the very beginning, I was fascinated with psychics.
Mm-hmm.
So I read some true stories, and everything was nonfiction. You know, I at the time when I was getting into it, more into it, I guess you could say, I enjoyed reading about Sylvia Brown. And it just sort of started there. And then, of course, you all were mentioning, which I'm thrilled about, by the way, that Ghost Hunters is coming back on. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about that. But that's
me
where I started
too.
With the ghost investigating. You know, it was watching them on television, and I was kind of fascinated with that. And that's kind of where it all developed. I wanted to be able to pull a psychic, you know, who my protagonist, she's kind of struggling a little bit with her gifts coming back to her. She had it as a young girl. She kind of squelched it. It starts coming back to her, and now she's ready to embrace it. But she and her best friend decide to get this group together to do ghost investigations. They want to help other people on the island, on Sullivan's Island. And they just begin doing their investigation. And along with that, of course, then is a serial killer that's loose on the island killing women. And it takes Marie and the team with her abilities along with the local police department, and they kind of work together to find the killer.
That's cool.
I wasn't kidding. I said I want to buy all of her books.
Yeah, believe it.
The series sounds fantastic.
Well, there's a one of our normal listeners lately, as of late, I should say, Bree Danger actually has bought a couple of her books, and she is reading one now. I believe The Secret of Coffin Island, I think, is the one that she's reading right now.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Great.
That's like the in the series.
Great.
Yeah. Great. So I could be wrong. So when Bree comes on, she'll correct me, I'm sure. So, but I anybody that's into the paranormal, we welcome you. You know, I mean, we want to hear, we want to promote, mm-hmm. we want to extend. And I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, we do believe in Parunity, and
mm-hmm,
whether you're
absolutely.
A nonfiction or fiction writer, it doesn't matter. Your stuff is
mm-hmm.
is everything adds. Everybody can bring something to the table. That's my theory. So
that's right. That's right. I agree. Well, I had an interesting scenario for me when I was writing this series. I want to say it was probably the second book. We have a local group here in town, so I'll give them a little plug, Antietam Paranormal Society, and they are an awesome group, and they were very kind enough and gracious enough to invite me along on one of their investigations, and this is probably back in 2012, and that really opened my eyes as to what takes place for a ghost investigation, because, you know, you do watch it on television, and you obviously are going to get the highlights when you're watching the show because they've only got so much time. But when I realized the detail that goes into, you know, first interviewing the client, obviously, and then interviewing any researching any history that takes place wherever they're investigating, and that takes a ton of time. And then when I got there, you're looking at all the equipment and all the computers and the whole scenario. I mean, it was mind-boggling just to see what they have to do to put it all together before they even go and do the investigation. And that was key for me because I was right in it and I was able to experience it, and that helped me bring that to my stories and kind of made it a little more believable.
Right. Right. Well, I think that's one of the other thing that helps with books such as yours is that the author themselves, especially if it's fiction, you know, they should at least experience it once or twice, and that would only add to the book. It's going to give it more mm-hmm. light, more like frosting on the cake, so to speak, you know.
That's right.
Shush, I'm diabetic. I want that too. Shush. But yeah, I mean, I haven't read the book, but I'm sure that Cindy's going to read it before
mm-hmm.
me, and I'm sure she's going to give us an update on it. I myself,
sure
I mean, I'm very interested in paranormal books. I have relatives that, you know, read everything from Vampire Diaries to just like ghost stories that are fiction and different stories like that. I think as imagination goes. It's
mm-hmm.
awesome that you can sit down and write a book out of thin air.
Right. It's amazing.
You know, like that. I mean,
yeah.
with my books, because they're nonfiction, I'm actually giving you factual stuff and detail and stuff that's laying in
right.
front of me. You
right.
know what I mean? It's not,
right.
not out of the
right.
thin air, you know, or
right.
like what we were talking about earlier with Michael Keane. I mean, he
right.
is actually searching.
Yeah. I mean, he is investigating.
Yeah. He's doing a
many
lot of searching.
Hours.
And, yeah. And it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
that is different, but when a fiction author can take pull it out of the air. I just think that's an amazing talent.
I agree completely.
Thank you.
So I want to say hi to J.P. Lewis and Steve Brand. Hi, welcome.
Yeah, so can you pin the phone number down on the bottom? Because I want to make sure that we have that available. Because we will take the last part of the show, Robin, so that people can call and talk to you and ask you some questions as well. Hope you don't mind.
No, great.
Yeah, we like this. We like to keep people, you know, interactive as much as possible. We've been trying to get these guys to call more, but I think they're a little shy. But that's okay. We've got to get them over that. So let's talk about a few of your books. Kind of just give us the rundown on the book, starting with the title, and so that we can get people to reach out and buy your book.
Sure. You know, the first book, of course, is Sullivan's Secret. And like I said, that takes place on Sullivan's Island, South Carolina. And it's a serial killer that's taken place there. The second book, Secret of the Big Easy, that takes place in, obviously, New Orleans. That book, actually, this book was the one that probably frightened my husband. He said he was going to start sleeping with one eye open at night because he couldn't understand where I came up with this stuff. You know, it was kind of, and I don't know where it comes from either, to be honest with you.
It just, I always think come hear it. Exactly.
That's
hello,
right.
Romy.
Hi, Romy.
Sorry, we call out people's names from time to time. We probably should not interrupt, but that's okay.
But, so then the third book is Federal City Secret, and, of course, that takes place in Washington, D.C. That's a little different. It's got to do with some politics. It's a kidnapping, and that's that was fun to do as well, just kind of a different slant.
Mm-hmm.
Then the fourth book, Secret of Coffin Island, that's back down on South Carolina on Folly Island, and that kind of pulls in Edgar Allan Poe, his story, The Gold Bug. I kind of intertwined that into the story. It was kind of a fun way to pull some of those things taking place because he actually was on Sullivan's Island and penned The Gold Bug when he was there. So I thought that was kind of neat to be able to bring those two stories together. And
cool.
Then the last book, Savannah Secret, that is taking place, of course, in Savannah, Georgia, and that one deals with vampires. And that
ooh.
Was cool. That was fun. Yeah.
That would
different.
Be fun. I'm into vampires.
Yeah. I'm into vampires, too.
So do you take requests for new ideas to write?
I haven't, and nobody's ever really asked about that. It just kind of comes to me with ideas. You know, I mean, if anybody wants to,
I got one for you.
Ahead.
A psychic.
Okay.
Psychopath.
Oh God, dang!
Horror clown.
You're so ridiculous. He's been ridiculous.
You know what?
The psychic would always know the next move the cops were going to make.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, shoot.
It'd be kind of a cool book.
I don't know.
We can just introduce her to Mungie, and she can just, you know, take it from there.
Yes.
I'll have to do an in-depth interview, right?
There you go. May 20th. May 20th. Pop back in here. You'll hear him.
Okay.
He's one of all of our all-time favorites. He's amazing. In fact, we still got his picture here.
Deep tea.
Oh. So I can reach it, like. Here's his picture. I don't know if anybody can see it.
Oh, you're pulling my picture. Oh.
There's Mungie.
That one is mine, right?
Yep. Mungie.
The Mungie.
Yep. So,
the Mungie maniac.
I just always thought, you know, it's like we were talking with Stitches, who's another horror clown, where he actually investigates the paranormal. And so if you got, it'd be a really cool team, investigative team, if you got some horror clowns together. You know, why not? Have them start out at like some circus or something. They were working, somebody got killed.
Oh,
and
Bob Murphy. It must be Robin's husband. He said, my eyes are wide open. Both my eyes are wide open.
But, that's cool. But what I was saying, like, literally, you know, these clowns that start out as, you know, circus clowns or something, and they go on to somebody gets killed,
Lord
and they actually,
mercy.
One of them psychic, and
there's no doubt, anytime you bring in a scary clown, it's gonna be a great story. So, you know, without a doubt.
A psychic horror clown that writes ballads.
Oh, that's hysterical. Yeah, you know, what would be scarier, the ghost or the clown?
The clown.
You know.
That he's psychic.
I wouldn't be scared of the ghost. It would be the clown.
Right.
Put the clown in a really, really, like, haunted house.
Well,
you know?
Okay, so you're saying that he's also a serial killer, psychopath, and he's psychic. That's just terrifying. My God. Oh, my God.
Oh, well. You know, the whole thought is, you know, it's something different.
The whole thought is just don't write it.
It's just different. It's just different.
Yeah, I'll write this down, and I'll put it off in the corner somewhere for the future.
For real.
And then you can interview Angie for that one.
Oh, my God, Heather, that's not even funny. She said maybe they aren't just psychic. Maybe they are doppelgangers.
Yeah.
Ah!
Hey.
There you go. I want to come back to this whole thing with the stories, but I really want to know about this platform that is this something that you created yourself that you put together to help new authors?
Yeah. What happened was when I started out in the very beginning, I had on Sullivan's Secret, I had somebody reach out to me. It was a small press publisher and very small press. It got me out a little bit, but I realized that I was able to pretty much market it on my own. So I took it over, self-published it. I think I had written the second book by then, maybe even the third. I can't even remember now. But the thing that was so frustrating was, you know, you're out there, as all authors, you know, indie authors doing this, you're self-publishing, doing it on your own, everything on your own. You're marketing, you're trying to get your name out there, you're trying to get people interested in your book, as well as trying to write and research and do all that goes into it. And what I found frustrating was when you're trying to get the book out there and say certain sites that you want to have them review your story, you ask them for a review or could you put it up on your website and try to get that going. And they would have these limitations where, well, you have to have 5 5-star reviews already before we'll even review your book. So it was kind of like, okay, that's what I'm trying to do. You know, like I'm trying to get a review. It's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? It was very frustrating.
Right.
And
I'll review for you anytime, Robin.
What's this?
I'll review for you anytime, Robin. Just send it to me.
Okay. But I had other things, like you'd go out and you'd ask other folks that maybe were a little more established. Some authors would keep information close to the vest, and they wouldn't share some of the tips or information, and that was frustrating. Or something cost a lot of money to do that, and I just said, you know what, I'm tired of this, and this is crazy. So I just took everything that I had learned and just put it all together and created the Rookie Writer's Book, and from there came the website, and that was kind of where it all materialized.
Nice.
That's
Hi,
awesome.
Jennifer Rose.
That's awesome. Yeah, I
Jennifer Rose is on?
Yeah.
Wow. Hello.
I think it's amazing because it's like, you know, when I started out, I wish I would have had, you know, help myself. I mean, there's just stuff that you can't, I don't know, you don't plan for. I mean, when you sit down and write, it's like, I'm kind of lazy, all right, I'll admit it. When it comes to writing, I'm lazy because I have a hard time putting my thoughts down on paper, and then once I start writing, I don't like it, and then I
toss it. I don't toss them. I never toss them. I keep them.
But there's stuff in there that probably would have been good, and I just tossed it anyways.
But that's
the point of
right.
But then again,
or you put,
you know,
one
I,
line through.
It's like that. I can't even think of the name of it. It's like Dragon something. It's like where you could talk your book
and it writes
it for you.
Yeah.
Like that's what I
need.
Yeah.
That's what I need to
talk
my book.
That would help.
Yeah. You know, and then find somebody to rate the book. Like, because my first two books, they're both on Amazon and they're in Barnes & Noble. And, I don't know if there's any reviews there. I don't look.
I rate
I have
books.
No idea.
I'm not kidding. I mean, do reviews.
I can't read. The first chapter, I'm... I am. Normally, I am. I like the audiobook thing.
Oh, I love audiobooks, too.
You know, I like that better.
I still love a really good book in my hands, though. Come on now. Come on now.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Well, you know what? Speaking of audiobooks, my first book now, it's all in secret. I'm just now in the process of getting it out on audiobook. I'm working on that now.
Yeah. So, are any of these other books on audiobooks or?
Just the first, the other book that I did, my mystery romance, Point Shoot for Your Life, that was out there. That's out there now. And I just begun the series just about a month ago. I'm in the middle of it, and I have a narrator working on it and getting Solve and Secret together now. So I'll just continue on with each one. That's very time-consuming as well. Although it's easier on me.
You know what? For people like me that drive and we don't listen to the radio and we want something to listen to, if it's a good book, audio book, I will listen to it all the time. And and I love listening to stuff too. So don't put any of those suggestive things underneath it. You know, when you're sleeping, you know, suggested. What do they call that? I can't think of it.
Oh, subliminal messages.
Subliminal messages. Yeah.
Hi, Guyton. Hi,
could you imagine, Teddy, you're not going to chew tobacco anymore?
Oh, my God, I would totally do that one.
Yeah, you would.
I totally would.
That would be awesome.
No more tobacco spittle on the mic.
Oh, terrible.
Oh. But the truth. You know it's the truth.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe something else. I mean, if it's in your wheelhouse, maybe you should do some more paranormal investigations to get some more ideas for more books.
You can always come in and do some investigations with us.
Oh.
That would be a hoot. That would be fun. Because I think I'd pick your brain too, Cindy, because that kind of your abilities kind of fascinate me too. So I'd probably want to sit down and chat with you.
I'd love that. Wouldn't that be fun if I had a character after me?
Hey,
oh my God.
I've done that many times. Yes, I have. I've done that many times. So
fun. Yeah, anytime you want it, I'll give you my number. How's
that? Can we unplug her battery?
No battery. It's just, it's from the universe.
Yeah, I know.
Nope, we aren't unplugging her.
Yeah.
We need her.
Now, you know, Robin, I'm going to add. That's all, folks. Yeah. So,
we all got it.
Yeah, we all got it. Don't swallow. Do not spit that tea out.
Wow.
You better swallow it.
You just told her to swallow. That's a terrible thing.
That's not what
now
I meant. You guys are bad people. Bad people.
Just pat her on the back. Burp her like a baby.
Oh, my God. I thought I was going to spit it out.
that won't help.
No,
God,
it won't.
No.
I'm just glad it didn't come out of her nose.
That would have been special.
Dude, I was trying not
paper
to
towels
get
over
it any place. I was like, let me wipe everybody off here.
Robin's going to take this right after this. She's going to go, can you believe that? It came right out her nose.
And I meant
it. Would have gone every place.
Yeah.
Though.
Well, what I wanted to do
down,
was
Sydney. That's what Rob did.
Wow. Because I reached out to you about being on the show, and I don't think you've ever heard of us. I'm sure you did a little research on us. You had to know we're crazy, right? I mean,
we're wild.
We're a little wild.
Yes, I do. That's great. I love it. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, we're...
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we're a hoot. We're told...
Hi, Sonia.
We're told that we are... that's my ex-sister-in-law. We were told...
HPS?
No, Sonia.
Hi, HPS, but I don't know
what HPS is. Anyways, we're told that we're kind of like on the border of
shock jocks,
not drops.
Yeah, we're not shock jocks.
See, this is why I need sugar.
Oh.
That's right. That'll help.
Then, honey, just pain.
Well, you know, finding out that you're diabetic and have to change everything in 3 weeks, but I can say I lost 8 pounds in 3 weeks.
So.
Yes.
And so
good job.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, you know, we.
I know. She cracked me up.
Now, you guys that are, I want to know if anybody that is watching or listening on Blog Talk, one of the two, has anybody read one of Robin's books? I mean, I know Bree's out there somewhere, but
Bree,
I would like to know, and I'm pretty sure she would like to know as well. So if you haven't, you better. In fact, I'm going to bring up her website here, and then we can promote it for her.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, Bud. Seed. Okay. So Robert says the psychic sat in her chair drinking her tea. Then the killer popped into her mind. The startling and unexpected revelation made the tea spurt from her nostrils.
Wow. Robert.
Hey, I like that. It's going in my next book.
Well, you just lost that, Robert.
Well,
he better copyright it quick.
Right, exactly.
But it's already there. I don't think he can. Or yeah, never mind. Doesn't matter. I just had her website up here. Where did it go?
This is just my Amazon. I had the Amazon because I was like, I'm gonna look at all these.
Oh, the books. Yeah, she has. And when I was Robin, I have to tell you, when I was looking you up, this other doctor.
We were stalking you, really.
Yeah. And
yeah, there is a Dr. Robin Murphy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, whoa, that's not her.
Oh, Robert said reading The Forest hasn't gotten very far into it yet.
Oh, so he's reading Secrets of Coffin Island, The
Forest? Is that right? Robert, you're reading. I don't know what the LOL is for. Reading The Forest, haven't gotten into it very far yet. LOL. Excuse me. No,
cool.
Ted, I think you've had too much sugar.
Yeah, that's one thing about the series. You can read it in sequence or you can read it as standalone. So that's, you know, I give enough backstory that you know what's going on with the characters.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So that's
fantastic.
Helpful.
What is, this is stupid because I can't find it. What is your website, Robin?
It is RookieWritersSolutions.com.
That's right.
RookieWritersSolutions.com.
There we go.
Should I pin that?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
but can you just throw it in there somewhere?
All right. How about if I'm going to do.
You're going to unpin that?
I'm going to unpin this. I'm going to do.
Rookie, you want to, excuse me, there you go. Little did she know the tea had been tainted until the burning sensation coursed through her veins, inching closer and closer to her terrified, palpitating heart. Robert and Heather Palmer on two different sides of the world are writing this book
Rookie
themselves.
Rookie Writer
Solutions.com. So there you go. So you don't even have to write it. You can just like go back on this feed and pull it all off and you'll have your next book.
There you go. I'll have my next story.
There you go. All about a psychic that spurts tea out her nose.
Okay, and I'm going to put the phone number for us. Okay, so please listen, guys. I am putting the website for Robin and our phone number for you to call in.
Yes,
which I probably should. So you have good. It's on two separate lines. Perfect.
Okay, so you
it
guys are able
great.
To call in anytime to ask questions. I do want to remind people that at the top of the hour, we are going to be playing the first chapter to Heart Island.
Yes. Mark.
A Cemetery of Strangers.
From Michael Caine.
Yep.
From Michael Caine's book.
Yep. That's going to be awesome. The first chapter really got me. I mean, the first and second chapter got me. But.
Well, the introduction was pretty.
It was pretty good.
Yeah. That's what was like. I was like, wait, what? Did he just say? Actually, she, because it's Norma that's reading it, right?
So I'm gonna kind of read what Robin, if you don't mind, I'm gonna read your bio here. It says Robin Murphy is an Amazon bestseller author of a paranormal mystery series and also writes chick lit. What is chick lit?
Chick lit.
It's got a little bit of romance. It's kind of got it's light, you know. It's got a little comedy in it, and my protagonist is a woman. So that story is going to shoot for your life.
Okay, and it says here she is a speaker on author platforms, self-publishing, and marketing, and the sole proprietor of Rookie Writers Solutions. com. She also worked in administrative graphic design, desktop publishing, writer, self-publishing arena, and for more than 30 years. Wow, that's a long time. That's nice. Writing skills are at the top of her field. She currently is a virtual admin and a freelance writer.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's been a good road.
So. She spent 30 years writing or being in the field. That's cool. I understand.
Yeah, I left full-time work back in 2016. I was working at a university close to home here, and I left to work from home as a virtual admin, and being able to do that gives me more time to do my writing and do some freelance writing for a magazine and travel and, you know, enjoy life. So.
Yeah, and I think that's awesome. We both wish that we could do that, right, Cindy?
Oh, Jesus.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, not funny, but it's kind of cool because you even have, if they go to, even if they just go to the Amazon.com, it shows where she got blogs by her, you know, that she's posted with some really cool information on there as well. Wow, you're awesome, Robin. We like you.
Thank you very much. I like you guys too.
That is cool.
It's getting too chilly for me.
You're getting cold?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'm going to push everybody to go out and purchase one of her books. You guys need to do that. We know Robert has. I was waiting for Bree because I wanted her to speak up because she loves Robin's books. She told me last week when I was when we were doing in the dark. Yeah, she was talking about Robin's books and she loves them. Oh, yeah.
I think she was even talking about it. Oh, she was excited.
Yeah, she was excited about it. So.
Very excited. Where is she? I should message Bree. Go, Bree, where are you? It's Robin.
It's funny how, like, being an author.
She might be tattooing or
she might be.
Piercing.
Yeah. When you're a writer and you have those ideas, like the vampire one, I mean, what made you think about writing about vampires? I mean, I know that it's cool. I mean, it's extremely cool, but, you know, maybe just a different thing.
It's a different take. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when you're doing a series, I didn't start out to make it a series. The first book kind of led to that, and I actually missed my characters. You know, I had so much fun writing that one that I had to continue it on. And I had always flirted with the idea with vampires, but that was never really my deep niche. You know, that wasn't my area of expertise and really knowing a lot about them. I watched a lot of different vampire shows and read some books and all that, but sometimes, you know, you have to feel comfortable with that. So
it
took me a while to get to that point, and I finally, in Savannah, I had discovered that there's a lot of that that takes place. There's even a type of underground. There was an interesting, and I don't know how true it is, but sort of an underground group that considered themselves vampires. And there was a lot of that element that took place there. And when I started delving into it more, because we had traveled there for vacation and whatnot, the second go-around, then I started looking into it a little more and getting a feel for the area. And Savannah just had that vibe, you know. And so I I pulled in a little vampires, a little time travel, and just kind of pulled those elements together. And that was a fun story. It doesn't get into deep with the vampire angle because you still have the SIPS team as the main, you know, storyline. But
right.
them investigating
right.
this, I had it was fun. It was a cool thing to just do, and I felt more comfortable this go around in the series to write about it.
Yeah, you definitely, now that you've hit vampires, you need to do one with Dogman. You got to do one with Bigfoot. Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Bigfoot's fallen in love.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to. I think I've talked about doing witches
yeah.
too. I'd like to do something with witches.
I want to say a special shout out to Mr. Daryl Jones. That is a guitar player from Double Cross.
Oh, nice. I did say hi to him, but
yes,
I'm
awesome.
So excited.
Hello, Daryl, my buddy.
Hey, Daryl.
Hey,
Daryl. My Daryl and me.
Oh, my God.
Because you said my buddy.
Yeah, my buddy. My buddy, you're Daryl. But that's funny. There's Bree.
Because I just messaged you. Bree Danger in the house.
Yes. Okay, so, and Bree works for.
Track. I don't give a damn.
Bree works for DeVille Inc.
Brett Butler,
and,
Vampire Slayer.
And that's terrible, Robert. Well, just to kind of give you an idea, Robin, Robert is from Australia, and he is watching us live. And him and Heather Palermo, those two usually go back and forth with stuff, and she is also from Roger, and some of the people are, I don't know where some of them are from, but like Edna's from Caledonia.
Yeah, I was going to say like Caledonia area-ish. Okay, so I do have a question for you from Heather.
Okay.
She said, has Robin ever experienced any paranormal experiences? Have you ever experienced any paranormal experiences?
Unfortunately, I did not.
She did not.
I have not. No. The only time, I mean, not a personal experience, I should say, but when I was on the ghost investigation, I did get to experience seeing the flashlight test where they had set out the three flashlights and then were speaking to the spirit. It was in the, I think it was the Mason's Lodge, and there were some responses to that. But that was kind of the only thing that I really, I've never had the opportunity to have a personal experience.
That was still fun, though, I'm sure. Teddy he doesn't necessarily agree
You know me.
You don't know me.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, I don't do that. I hate it. I hate the flashlight trick. I hate all that stuff.
You and I are in agreement. Those whole stupid boxes.
So, Bree, what book are you reading right now? Because, you know, Robin's with us on the phone. We
have
a nice
conversation. How many books have you read?
And what are the titles?
What ones have you read? And you can even call us.
Yeah. Feel free to call in and speak with Robin.
Where did
that would be awesome.
Bingo.
What reading?
What the hell?
I don't know. You lost it.
I didn't lose it.
You lost it a long time ago.
A long time ago.
I just, you know, I find it, is there a large market of paranormal nonfiction authors?
Dude, I should show you.
I mean, there is a lot of vampire movies.
I have paranormal erotica. I have paranormal mystery. I have paranormal romance. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is huge. It is a really big genre. It really is.
It's a whole fantasy thing. I get you know.
Everyone wants to do some stuff with a
like,
vampire.
Like, instead of 50 Shades of Grey, it's...
50 Shades of Drac. 50 Shades with Drac.
That's terrible. Yeah, I get it. That's
there
terrible.
Now we're pinned again.
No, but I get it.
Oh, is my Tony here? Tony DeVille in the house.
Yeah, Tony.
Right, Tony.
There he is.
Oh, let's see what Bree says.
They say.
Yep. They say that if a writer cares for you, you'll never die because they use you as inspiration in their work. Was curious how many of your characters are inspired by people you know.
Well, that's interesting. There are quite a few. I'll never forget the first time I had an interview with my local newspaper here when Sullivan's Secret first came out. And the interviewer asked me, first question he asked was, to me, my two main characters, Marie, and then her best friend is Gail. And he asked me, which one was I? You know, was I Marie or was I Gail? And I kind of chuckled and I said, well, I'm a little of both. So those two are kind of sort of based on some personality of myself. But I've had some local friends that I probably pull more of their looks, maybe parts of their name, you know. As far as personalities go, it's pretty much just made up in my head, you know. I don't think it's a particular person, one person that I've really written about, although I've had some family members that I've had them, their names in my books. You know, I've done some of that stuff, and that's why I tell people, don't tick me off or I'll kill you off in one of my stories. So
what's the legal aspect of that, though? I mean, you can't write about somebody specifically, right? I mean,
why not?
If it was, well, I don't know how that works.
Well, it's no, because you have your disclaimer in front that nothing's based on anybody. So it's really pure hypothetical people. You know, you can pull part of a name, part of a last name. Sometimes there's names that I think are just super cool that you have to use, and it just makes sense. You know, and you describe them. Maybe they're like that person, maybe they're not. But, yeah, there's no issues with any of that being a problem, or unless somebody read it and really got upset about it, but it's never really been that all the pieces like you're going to get a full name that's going to come out, you know.
So I understand that, actually, because I can remember at 14 starting to write one of my books using a last name that I just thought I was creating. The name was Castillo, Castillo.
Mm-hmm.
The next year I met my daughter's dad.
His last name was Castillo?
His last name is Castillo with no T.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Maybe psychic. Maybe.
Just a little bit.
It was just odd, though. It was too ironic to not, like, go, holy cats. Well,
yeah.
I like this. Heather says, paranormal romance, the moan that echoed in the dark.
Wow, nice.
Jennifer says it doesn't look blurry here, so that's good. I can see that it does look kind of blurry to me, but
yeah.
I also was thinking that the lighting is off a little bit.
So there is another question here. So Robin, Kristen Holmes was asking, do you have a favorite author?
I have a couple of different ones that have changed over the years. I used to read Nora Roberts a long time ago. She read a lot of paranormal stuff. I kind of lost track with her. I'm not really into her. I kind of now read some Janet Ivanovic. I like the Plum series because that's kind of humorous comedy. You know, I enjoy that. I've read The Da Vinci Code, you know, different. I kind of go all over the place. And then I read a lot of nonfiction books on psychics, like I said before, ghost hunting, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. I enjoy that to get more of the real stuff, you know, that kind of a thing.
Okay. Well, we're going to do one more question here because it's top of the hour and we got to get to our Michael Keane thing. But Edna McLean was saying, I'm a fan of Heather Graham's books. Has Robin read any of her books and are they similar?
Heather Graham as in the actress Heather Graham?
I'm not sure. I don't know who Heather Graham is.
I have. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that either.
Edna, is it the actress Heather Graham? Now I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, because I'm not familiar with Heather Yes, it is a glamour filter.
It's glamour filter. Tony.
Brie,
we're glamming out.
Brie has read Sullivan's Secret and Secret of the Big Easy.
Awesome.
Great. I hope she's
awesome.
Enjoying them.
And Edna said she's definitely going to check out your books. Just like me.
Nice. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it, to be honest. I really love series.
Track two.
I really love series, and so I can't wait to start reading series because I just love that.
Okay.
Give us a moment. We're going to pop off.
Yeah, we are going to do a quick commercial, and then we're going to run into the first chapter, which is going to run probably 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to come right back with Robin. So you guys better start calling in here and asking questions. That's a demand.
Do not call in while we're doing the chapter. So we're doing the chapter. Eric, I don't know if you heard me say hi. Hello.
Hi, Eric.
Oh, let's see. Heather Graham is a paranormal author.
Awesome. Okay.
No, she's a good author. I know that, but she could also be the actress, people. So I just was curious. So I think I'm going to find that out.
All right. So we're going to be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Great.
Commercials. All right.
Heather,
so hang tight.
Flashlight, recorder, and comfortable shoes, a simple guide to paranormal investigation. Written by Keith Spradley and Ted Van Son. If you're looking to join the living who research the paranormal or the unknown, this book will guide you to developing your techniques. Reverend Tim Shaw says, the work will guide you along your journey to seek the truth about life after death. Available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And you can find a direct link on paratalkradio.com. Get your copy today.
All right, so we are going to, at this moment, there's your commercial. So at this moment, I'm going to try and set this up for you. Some of you listened last week, and you joined us for the debut and the premiere of Heart Island, A Cemetery of Strangers, written by Ms. Michael Keane, and narrated by Norman Gratzky. Now, we did the intro last week, and we had a good time with it, and it was awesome. Mm-hmm. We spent the whole night talking about the book and everything with Michael, and it was awesome. So here's chapter one, we hope.
Lord have mercy.
Invisible John's trying. So this is chapter one, and I hope you enjoy. You guys, we will be posting a link to the audiobook on paratalkradio.com. Now, Michael has also stated that if you purchase the audiobook, once he gets email and all the information from you, he will sell you the copy of the actual book at half price. So
wait, what's that?
Yeah.
Yes.
So
I
you buy
remember.
The audio and you will get the regular book for half price. Take a listen. Heart Island, A Cemetery of Strangers by Michael T. Keane.
New York City, Heart Island, A Cemetery of Strangers. Written by Michael T. Keane. Narrated by Norma Jean Gradsky.
It's the same. It always starts the same.
Chapter 1, The Burial Crisis of 1822. By the early 1800s, New York City boasted a population of over 200,000, qualifying it as the largest city in the Western Hemisphere. As New York City's population grew, so did its number of dead. What has been referred to as the 1822 Manhattan Burial Crisis evolved into one of the city's most troublesome and hazardous social frenzies and failings. The 300-year-old Trinity Graveyard, a 2.5 acre of land in Lower Manhattan, was the idyllic resting place of Alexander Hamilton, among others, in 1804, after losing his historic duel with Aaron Burr. Today, workers in the city's financial district nearby may visit the site on breaks or lunch hours for a green, peaceful respite from offices and elevators. But in 1822, no one wanted to stroll to the cemetery. In fact, residents of the neighborhood found other ways and their routes to their destinations to specifically avoid the place. Why was this important in 1822? The smell, the all-encompassing stench. The definitive pervasive odor of hundreds of decomposing bodies in shallow graves, hastily interred only 2 or 3 feet underground. The fact that the number of interred in Trinity Church's graveyard in 1822 was estimated at 120,000 was just that, an estimate. The truth was that the huge number of bodies buried in that year alone could not be that. July of 1822 saw the highest death rates from yellow fever in New York City, particularly in areas south and west of the church. The Common Council and Board of Health passed a resolution in the month of August prohibiting further burials in the graveyard because of vehement complaints of offensive exhalations. Visitors to church and graveyard, casual passers-by, and residents in the surrounding streets found the source of the stench unmistakable, the smell of death. A doctor, prominent in investigating the causes of the yellow fever epidemic, hired workers to cover the graveyard in quicklime to speed up the process of decomposition. Men worked through the night, retching and heaving in a repulsive task. How could Trinity Church, along with Manhattan's 21 additional burial grounds, possibly keep up the city's rapidly growing death rate? By 1822, Trinity was surrounded by thriving commercial communities, while its modest graveyard barely encased a century's worth of bodies. New York City was facing an unprecedented crisis at an unprecedented speed. Existing accommodations in the city's burial grounds could not keep up with burying the staggering number of people dying. Other grounds in the city faced the same problem. Among them were North Dutch Church, Middle Dutch Church, and St. Paul's, all within a close radius of Trinity Church. Burying the city's dead surpassed the geographical burial boundaries imposed by the city. In 1839, that boundary extended to 14th Street. By 1859, it expanded uptown to 86th Street to bury its indigent dead outside the city limits in Potter's Fields, in what is now Washington Square Park and Bryant Square. By 1831, two of the first non-sectarian burial grounds in New York were formed: the New York Marble Cemetery, 1830, in the Bowery, and the New York City Marble Cemetery, a block away from the first. Most of stacked burials occurred in thick family vaults underground. In 1878, Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn was planned and developed by David Bates Douglas on an initial 178 acres of land, and was later increased by an additional 300 acres. The graveyard was modeled after Mount Auburn in Boston and Laurel Hill in Philadelphia. Douglas, who also served as the cemetery's first president, designed Greenwood as the ideal romantic landscape, a rural creation of sculpted hills, planted trees, and curved paths, fanciful names. In 1876, Harper's Weekly called Greenwood the largest and most beautiful burial place on the continent. Greenwood also charged to bury one's dead, which resurrected the anger of city officials who maintained that New York City still had not come to terms with burying its indigent and impoverished. In a fiery letter to the editor of the New York Times, these officials again described the coffins, skulls, and decayed bodies lying exposed on the corner of 50th Street and 4th Avenue, the location of one of the city's small Potter's Fields. In 1869, New York City purchased Hart Island as its official public gravesite. The rising number of the city's dead would now be buried well underground, but not without their own problems, perhaps later than sooner. 50 years later, almost identical descriptions of the same ghoulish discoveries in the Trinity Church graveyard would come to nest on Hart Island, jarring our attention and sensibilities while uncovering the shroud of mystery surrounding America's largest mass grave site with graphic contemporary examples. In 1775, British naval cartographers charted what they originally named Heart Island because of its general shape, which seemed to them to resemble a human heart. Other historic reports claim that the island was named after deer or harts hunted there. It's rather ironic that the nature of the business of Heart Island seemed to lack just that, heart, the emotional kind. Until a few short years ago, when public outcry brought attention to the severe erosion of grave sites and the subsequent exposure of human remains on the mysterious resting place. Just as a grisly assortment of bones and human skulls seeped out of their rest places, the emotion surge of family members and friends of loved ones buried there in the largest potter's field in America. By 1798, it was listed on maps as Heart Island, approximately one-third of a mile from the sea island shore, and measuring just about a mile long by one-third of a mile wide at its broadest point. This island, too, was the ancestral home of the Siwanoy Indians, who first hunted, fished, lived, and died there. This land was also purchased by Thomas Pell. Upon Pell's death, the land passed to his nephew, John Pell of England. His heirs sold it to Oliver de Lancy in 1774, a loyalist politician, soldier, and merchant during the American Revolution. Commanding officers occupied their own cottages, and officers lived in a large building at the south end of the island. Every evening at 5 p.m., a military dress parade was held. This space also included a library and a concert room where musically inclined soldiers performed with the regimental band. The first concert was given on November 14 when visitors and family members of the recruits came to Heart Island. They were required to get a pass from General Dix's office on Bleecker Street in Lower Manhattan, Greenwich Village, and were also required to pay a fare of 55 cents to board the ferry John Romer before it sailed the 21-mile distance from the Battery in Manhattan to Heart Island in the Bronx. Leaving the island was more difficult than landing on it. Visitors were hurried on their return boat trip, as the ferry docked only a half hour before sailing back to Manhattan. Once travelers accomplished this part of their trip, they would board a tugboat or ship, hire a rickety carriage at 20 cents per person, to take them to one designated railway station, Manhattan. That railway charged 55 cents for the next part of the trip to the 27th Street Railway Station, the last stop from which weary riders would disperse in their own directions before finally reaching their homes. Any leftover enjoyment from a day spent on Heart Island was soon overshadowed by fatigue and empty pockets. Many soldiers who occupied the island during wartime died in the line of duty, but also from disease. They were, of course, buried on Heart Island. In 1916, their remains were removed and reinterred in the Soldiers' Cemetery at West Farm in the Bronx. The remains of another group of Civil War veterans were disinterred from Heart Island in 1941. And moved to the Cypress Hills National Cemetery in Brooklyn, New York, which is the only United States National Military Cemetery in New York City. The remains of over 21,000 veterans and civilians are buried there. In 1864, as the American Civil War gained momentum, construction barracks began at the farthest southern tip of the island to hold approximately 5,000 prisoners of war. The City of New York, under the auspices of the Department of Public Charities and Correction, purchased Heart Island from the John Hunter family in 1868 for $75,000. The island was concurrently used as a training facility for new soldiers. Initially, between 2,000 and 3,000 raw recruits were expected. Ultimately, over 50,000 men trained on the island. 45 acres at northern end was designated as a potter's field in 1869. Its first burial would be soon.
I got to tell you, I mean, the more I listen to the facts and the information, you know, it's amazing. You know, it truly is. I know that some of you are listening to it and you're wondering what was happening. And basically, we have been playing a chapter from Heart Island, A Cemetery of Strangers by Mr. Michael T. Keene, who was narrated by Norma Jean Gradsky. And I brought this in because I was surprised about facts that he had dug up.
Right.
That was one of the biggest things. And we will continue to do this for a few more Mondays to, you know, mm-hmm. see where things go and how it goes until we can get that link placed up for his book. And like I said, you can purchase mm-hmm. the audio book, then get the actual book at half price. So let's get back to the schedule. Thank you. We are talking with Miss Robin Murphy, who is another author. She is a fictional writer of paranormal mysteries.
Oh my God, I have to say this. Sorry.
Okay.
So Heather says my filter doesn't exist today. I said, when does it? Just curious. Ha ha ha. And then Robert said it took off with Mercury retrograde.
Nice.
Heather.
So Robin has got some books, and Bree was talking about she's read a couple of them. Real quick again, it is.
Hey Cora.
The website again.
Hey Anita.
Is Rookie.
Rookie. WriterSolutions.com. And you guys can see that it's pinned, so you can see her her website.
Website is right at the bottom of the page.
And then right underneath the website is our phone number, so you can call in, and if you'd like to talk to Robin and ask her questions, you certainly can do this. And this freaking thing is driving me insane today. Nope. John, they can't touch him. No touching my microphone. No, that's your microphone.
Yeah.
No. Well, it's going to be a problem because I'm going to be doing some of this.
Yeah, well, that's terrible.
Yeah, stop that.
This is a limited dick. Okay. A limited dick.
Okay, so Sullivan Secret, Secret of the Big Easy, Federal City's Secret,
mm-hmm.
Secret of Coffin Island,
yes.
And
the last one is, hang on, I got
Savannah
it right
Secret.
Here.
Savannah Secrets. There we go.
Yes.
She's got a thing for secrets.
And they're all maroon and the SIPS team.
I got a secret.
Yes.
A secret, secret,
secret. Got a secret.
Got a secret.
You thought you'd get me on that one.
Yeah.
You can't be tried to get me, but I know
yeah.
my stuff. Stop jerking it off. Listen, Bree. You love it.
Yeah, you guys are terrible. Terrible. Crazy people.
Yeah, and no farting in Cindy's chair. Yeah.
Nobody did. He's just being he's Robert.
He's telling the truth, I'm sure
no,
of it.
No, he's just being Robert. Okay.
My God, I don't want to touch Hoshi's.
Okay. We'll see if anybody has called. Is probably, we got to get another screen up here because we can't see the other screen.
Can't see. I know. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Please. Okay.
I just checked it before.
I just want to make sure that we don't miss it if somebody's calling in. That's all. What I would love to do is maybe get some pointers from Robin, myself for writing my next book. But I'm writing now. Is there a big difference between? I mean, other than the fact that we've already discussed it, where fictional writers can pull their stories out of the air, where mine is. I don't know, everything's laying in front of me. There isn't that much of a difference when it comes to just putting it on paper, correct? I mean, other than pulling it out of the air. I mean, what kind of advice would you give me?
The key to writing anything, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, I think is the research. I mean, the research is huge. You need to be able to do that, and especially when you're doing nonfiction, obviously.
Right.
And when you have, if you're writing about personal experiences and things, I mean, that's obviously, you know, a little easier because you're talking about something that maybe happened to you or what have you. But research is a huge one. And I think every writer is different when it comes to how they write. Some people outline. Mm-hmm. I do both. I'm kind of also like a panster where you just kind of sit down and it comes to me and I just write and I, you know, I'm able to do that. But then before I begin all that, I do have to sit down and you've got to, for me, I create the characters. I start researching the subject or my main, what the story is going to be about, you know, beginning, middle, and end. You kind of have to have that mapping out where it's taking place. And then I start doing research on the setting. I do research on different things that, whatever it is that I may not know about. You know, it could be even something as small as when you're talking about the types of instruments, you know, the equipment that y'all take on ghost investigations. That has even changed since I was writing in 2012, that whenever you are doing, you know, writing now, I have to make sure that I'm staying up on the game with all the equipment and how technology has changed and gotten better. And so, you know, people can come out there and tell you, you know, you need to do this, this, and this. And it's good to take bits and pieces, but you really need to make it work what's best for you and what suits your style, I think.
Madam, I'll have to check it. But so we have some more questions here, I guess. Heather's got another question here. It says, mm-hmm. Robin, do you have tips for a new screenwriter?
For new screenwriters. It's okay. Do you have tips for new screenwriters?
I mean, obviously research and stuff like that, but she wants to write her own book.
Screenwriter.
It's a different type. I do know it's a different type of writing, you know, than actual just writing for screenwriting. I don't know a whole lot about screenwriting.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that a lot of times things are pulled from a story and there's a different way to go about it, but I don't know enough about screenwriting myself to be able to, you know, to give any tips on any of that,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately.
Hey,
I think any author would love to have their book become a movie. So that's a...
yes.
I mean, look at your books. I mean,
that would be great.
Yeah,
I mean, who would want Twilight or even 50 Shades of Grey, which actually was from Twilight?
Was it really?
Yes, it was fan fiction. So one of the things that is the unwritten rule is that you don't publish your fan fiction. And it's funny, as I was reading 50 Shades of Grey, which is not written very well, by the way, I kept going, man, this sounds just Twilight. It's just like Twilight, just like Twilight. And then finally my girlfriend goes, oh, didn't you know it was fan fiction? I'm like, nope, sure didn't. But it makes sense because I get it now. Okay, I have a question for you. Yeah. So I have a question for you, Robin. Do you like serial killers? Like, do you have a fascination with them? Because I kind of do.
No, I don't think I do. I'm not quite sure. Although, I don't know, whenever things like that, serial killers, it kind of does suck me in sometimes, you know? It's like you have to wait and watch it to the very end to see, you know, what happens. But I don't really know if I have a fascination with them. It was just kind of an easy thing to write for my first one. It was kind of like made sense to have a serial killer on the island, so... I think I have a fascination with a lot of different weird stuff. So,
Let's see. I mean, I don't know if I could write fiction, but you know, there's a lot of things that I'm interested in. I've thought about writing, you know, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think I could. I don't know. A friend of mine actually writes children's books.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, cool.
You know, that's kind of cool. I mean, of course, children's books are what, less than 25 pages or something like that, or 50 pages.
Right. I think there's a knack to all of that. You know, any writer in any genre, I, you know, because me writing now is I think is fascinating because it takes a certain creative mind to be able to put anything to paper like that. And when you're, you know, making stuff up like that and putting it down, and then when you have readers enjoying it, you know, that's the real thrill. When I started writing, it was pretty much just for me. It was a personal thing that I needed to do. I had to tell a story, and I had fun while I was doing it. That was the key for my writing experience. I actually have a blast when I'm writing. And then when I would get a review and somebody leaves a nice review and they start talking about your characters or asking about your characters, then it's even more exciting. It's kind of the icing on top. You know, it's like, oh, okay, I'm having fun, but I'm also having other folks enjoy it as well. And that's kind of nice. It's kind of cool. Where'd they go? Are they talking?
I lost the whole thing. I can't get the live back.
Yeah, live video interrupted. Says it should resume shortly. Hello? Hello? They just said, guys, we lost everything. Hello. Hello. Hello.